Hi there, and welcome back to the Hugo's There podcast. I'm your host, Seth Heasley, and I'm reading the Hugo winners one guest at a time. My guest for this episode is Jonathan Watkins from CinemaSins, and we are going to be discussing Robert Heinlein's 1962 Hugo winner, Stranger in a Strange Land. So thanks for joining me, Jonathan.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to doing an episode of this for a while. So
yeah, I've been wanting to snag somebody from CinemaSins for a while, and cool. I knew Aaron Dyson doesn't read books, and so
I'm glad we talked about that. Yes, that guy's anti-book. No, he's not. But no, it's we get a kick out of
a little too
of,
busy,
that.
I think, to read.
Yeah, yeah. He chooses to focus. It's hard, man. I mean, you gotta not do something. There's too much out there. Like, I don't play video games.
Yeah, I mean,
and you know, I just you gotta pick something.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Well, why don't we start talking about you? You know, where yeah. might people know you from?
Well, you mentioned CinemaSins. I've been a writer for about 3 years now total. Started with Music Video Sins, and then started writing for CinemaSins, and then Aaron and I mean, with obviously the help of everybody else, but Aaron and I kind of kicked off TV Sins a couple years ago. We just, it's been about a year and a half, I guess, but we're having a lot of fun with that. And I do a podcast with Aaron Dicer and the lovely Danae Hughes, and that is called Behind the Sins, where we just, every week we talk about the previous week's YouTube adventures with our family, our brand,
right.
And we just kind of talk about our family and weird sex stuff, and you know, just all kinds.
That's
of,
appropriate for this book, actually.
Yeah, no kidding. Cannot wait to talk about that.
I really enjoy in Behind the Sins when you guys are talking about like the weird stuff that you ended up Googling and forgot to be in like incognito
mode.
Oh
my God. Like that FBI watch list is a legit fear that we have. Like
yeah,
sometimes, because
sure.
some of the stuff we look up, it's, you just, you're like, wait, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, this is not good.
Yeah. Can I trust incognito mode here? I don't know. But yeah. So CinemaSins, I think in a lot of ways, I mean, it's obviously huge, but I know there's like a vocal minority of people who like try not to understand what you guys are doing and take offense at everything. And so I want to encourage people, if there's anybody out there who's like, oh, I don't like the CinemaSins people, check out Sincast especially. And because
absolutely,
if you ever wanted to know just how much these guys love movies, that's a really, really good place to start.
Yeah, that's the thing I can never really get around. And it's fine. It is what it is. I mean, everything gets, you know, detractors. But I, you know, if you don't think we're funny, I totally get that. Like, you know, humor is so subjective. And if you just think we're not that funny, I get it. But yeah, but questioning our love of movies, with the exception of maybe Danae,
well, she hasn't seen them, right?
Yeah, is a losing battle, but you know, go for it. We'll I don't know. We do love movies, despite the name, is what Barrett always says. So I'll just go with that. But we have wonderful fans, though. It's a lot of fun.
And the TV Sense stuff has been fun recently, just because it's been so immediate. Where you're like doing the Mandalorian.
We call it insta-sending,
right.
And we started it with the last season of Rick and Morty, where they had those four or five episodes they released like last spring or summer, and we did those, and that went over really well. And so with The Mandalorian coming, we decided, you know, that makes sense. Let's do that. And and it's gone over well. And I think that's definitely something, especially with Disney Plus, those 87 series that are coming out.
Yeah.
You'll probably be seeing more of that.
Yeah. Cool.
I don't think we'll be tackling like we're not going to be doing like the new season of Law and Order Special Victims Unit, I don't think, but
right.
some of these smaller, fun, you know, things that make sense. Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense to stay in the zeitgeist, right? And talk about what people are watching.
Yeah. For sure. And I like these shows. I feel like I'm glad we're back to kind of the weekly. I feel like that's becoming more of a thing again. And
yeah,
I think that's creating more of a water cooler atmosphere, even if it's on social media.
Right.
But I definitely dig that, because I love movies. I do. But I'm also a huge TV fan, and I grew up watching television constantly. And I love TV shows. And so I'm glad we're getting back to that.
Well, that's probably a good place to jump into kind of talking about your nerdy history.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Where does your science fiction fandom come from?
Honestly, like early on, it would be Star Trek and 50 science fiction films. My mom was a fan of 50 sci-fi. So I was born in the late 70s. So, and during the VHS boom, when we were renting movies like crazy, she would rent a lot of those for me when I was younger. Cause you know, that was stuff so I saw like, you know, Day the Earth Stood Still and, Them was a huge, was one I love, which I am a horror movie fan too. So I think maybe that's a cross between like sci-fi and horror. Forbidden Planet, which I probably didn't really understand as a kid, but I did watch it a lot. I might have thought, you know, Anne Francis was cute. I'm not sure. And I'm trying to think, you know, just War of the Worlds or versus Flying Saucers, just all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I watched a lot of that stuff. And Star Trek, though, my mom took me to see Wrath of Khan.
Oh, nice.
When I was six. And
I was going to say,
scared the hell out of me. Yeah. Scared the hell out of me, especially I still have a fear of like stuff getting in my ear because of that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And then I watched the original series on syndication, you know, and, and then of course, Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and all that stuff eventually came. I watched all those, including Voyager, including Enterprise. I've always been a huge Trekkie. So I think that's my main entrance. Yeah, yeah. And then obviously, I mean, we had the Star Wars movies, you know, the good ones.
Right.
I do like some of the more recent ones. I'm just joking around. Stuff like Last Starfighter, you know, Enemy Mine, Night of the Comet. I really, and like the horror sci-fi stuff, I really dig, like the Alien movies and The Thing, you know, and that's probably understandable since I'm also a big horror movie fan. But I mean, growing up in the 80s, it was hard to ignore science fiction. Back to the Future, just, you know, so just, I think it's the pretty typical stuff. I don't have anything like really cool and obscure to talk about.
Right. Well, it's always, it's a question I always ask, and there's such a variety because there's some people who are just like, we didn't have a TV. I was into books,
you know,
from when I was very young and that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, books, like I've read a lot, I've always read, but my mom was really into horror novels like Stephen King and stuff, and mysteries, crime fiction and murder mysteries and stuff. So that's mostly what we had in our house. I was thinking back though, Wrinkle in Time was a big book for me.
Yeah.
Although not really sci-fi, but obviously like the Lord of the Rings books, The Hobbit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And, you know, I read all those as a kid. And then eventually when I got probably in high school, I started really getting into like Vonnegut, and he's got some science fiction for sure. You know, stuff like that. But I will admit, one of the reasons your podcast intrigued me, cause I was like, I can read the books. This will like make me read the books.
Right.
Cause I don't want to listen to the episode, you know, until I've read the books. And, so I've read a few, but I'm going to read Dune this year because the movie's coming out. And that's your first episode, right? I think
it was my second, third.
Yeah.
Maybe third.
But yeah, I have like all these, I have like a list of, you know, I have a huge TBR pile, and there's a lot of science fiction on there, but I sadly have not read a lot of the classics. So I'm trying to get to those. Would 1984 count? That was another one I really liked as a kid.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think that's solidly you know, dystopian. Did you happen to tally up how many Hugo winners you'd read?
Oh, yes. Actually, hold on 1 second. Do you just want to know the number? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I've read 5 of the ones that actually won.
Okay.
I read, but there were three Vonnegut novels that were nominated, and I had read all of those.
Right.
So if I want to count those, it's like 8, but it's not very many.
Nice. Well, yeah. And I know you've been on Chat Cemetery a few times, right?
I have. Yes.
Where Deanna's like, she's not doing quite the way I'm doing it with Hugo's, where it's random order, just whatever the guest wants to talk about, right? Where she's actually going through an order.
Yeah, man.
Which is quite a project.
Yeah, and she's doing everything too. Like she's doing, and now she's even doing like comic books for the patrons. And I've done like, I did the Regulators, which was Bachman. And then I've been on for a few of the movies, but they're like weird ones. Like I did the Firestarter sequel from Sci-Fi and I did the Sometimes They Come Back movies.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
she can get me to do, I like watching weird stuff like that. So she's always like, hey, I don't have anybody for Mangler 3. Could you do that? I'm like, yeah, I'm down, man. Let's do it.
Nice. Yeah. When she was first putting it together, I was like, hey, I've been wanting to read Misery. So sign me up for that one.
That's awesome. Yeah. She's great.
Yeah. Okay. So, why did you choose this book?
Okay. So kind of like what I was talking about, my TBR pile, you sent me, you know, I looked at the list of what had been done and not. And I think I also, I said I would do Puppet Masters. I mean, I'm sorry, Starship Troopers. But I've read Starship Troopers. So I was glad I got to do this one because when in the mid to late 90s, Puppet Masters came out and Starship Troopers, Verhoeven Starship Troopers. And so I read those books and that was my, that was my entrance into Highland. Cause I would, especially back then, I would read the book. I would, whatever movie was coming out based on a book, that's, I would read the book, you know? And so those two Highland adaptations were coming out. And I think at the time, I could not verify this, but I swear there was talk. And I know The Stranger in a Strange Land has been in development in various phases, but I couldn't find anything this specific about it. But I swear there was talk that Tom Hanks wanted to do it. But I couldn't verify that. But I don't know why I would remember that, you know, if it wasn't at least had some truth in it. Right. This is pre-social media. So, you know, this is like an Entertainment Weekly like snippet or something where... but he is a sci-fi fan, so it's very possible that I'm not making. And he would, you know, 1995 Tom Hanks would be perfect, probably. But so I had it on my. I was just like, I'll read this one next, and then just because I'm sure other things came up that I wanted to read or whatever, or I got busy having to read stuff I had to read for college, or because that's when I was in college. I just never got around to it, and I've had I bought the paperback around that time. And it's just been sitting on my my various shelves over the last, you know, 25 years. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna finally get to read Stranger in a Strange Land. Because I've always heard it's like one of the like epic, you know, like one of the best science fiction books, at least in my, that's where I feel like I've heard.
It's definitely one of the classics, right?
Yes.
And it's always a question, like, how is it going to land for you based on that reputation?
Well, and I was reading about it after I read it. I was reading stuff on it, and I guess it was one of the first that was, like, taken more seriously and was a bestseller. Like, that's kind of how I read into the information on it. It was also very controversial, which is always interesting. And I was... I mean, I know we'll get into the, and I don't know, I know we'll get into the, obviously what happens in it, but I was really surprised. It was very different than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Speaking of Kurt Vonnegut, it kind of like, that's kind of what it felt like to me, which I guess I shouldn't be that surprised because Starship Troopers is definitely, have you read Starship Troopers?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's definitely got some agendas.
Oh yeah.
Very different agendas than this does, but But this still felt a lot more, but I feel still feel like Starship Troopers is not as satirical as Paul Verhoeven made it in the movie.
Oh no, definitely not. Yeah.
But this feels straight up like satire. And like, I would, if they had made this around this time, this would have been a great movie for Verhoeven to tackle. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. As I understand it, he hated Starship Troopers and basically wanted to subvert it at every turn.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's because if I remember, it's been a while. I haven't read it since the movie came out, but I feel like the book is almost more maybe more pro-war than the movie is. Because well, the movie's very anti, obviously.
It is very anti-war. Yeah,
and I don't know that the book was like you know, but I do think it was a little pro, a little more gung ho, like you know, a little more you know, G.I. Joe. Fighting aliens kind of thing.
Well, yeah. So. And I mean, there's elements in that one. I mean, we're not talking about that book, obviously, but, you know, there's the elements of the, like the poll tax almost, right? Where in order to have the franchise, right, you have to serve in the military and become a citizen. And yeah, there, I mean, there's some problematic stuff in kind of his philosophy there. And I think that book isn't super, super popular because of that.
But did win a Hugo.
It did, yeah. And so did The Moon is a Harsh Mistress is the super libertarian one, right?
Nice, nice. I need to... Oh, it's more libertarian than Stranger in a Strange Land?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's not as countercultural, really.
Gotcha, gotcha.
But yeah, it's an interesting one. I enjoyed that one.
That might be my next Highland. No, I like Highland. I mean, I've read three of his books. I mean, Puppet Masters, if I remember correctly, was a little more straightforward. More, and it had a little horror element to it and stuff like that, which is always fun. And it kind of...
I've only ever seen that movie, so...
I think that book came out before Body Snatchers. if I remember correctly. Because I remember...
That sounds right.
I had seen The Invasion of the Body. I never read the book, but I'd seen all the movies many times before I read mm-hmm. Puppet Masters. And I feel like I remember at the time thinking, wow, this is kind of copying Body Snatchers. And then somebody was like, yeah, but this came out before that book did and the movies. And so
1955 but, for The Body Snatchers, by the way.
The book?
Yeah, the book.
Gotcha.
I have actually read that one.
Yeah, who wrote that?
Jack Finney,
that's right. Yeah, I do want to read. That's one. I've just seen the movie so many times. Like, I have a hard time going back and reading the book.
Which movie? The 70s one?
Yeah. Both. That was another 50s sci-fi that I watched a lot as a kid.
The Kevin McCarthy one?
Yeah.
I actually think of him from UHF.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and he, you know, it's funny. I actually tweeted about it, I think, but I just rewatched 78 Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, yeah.
A week or two ago. And I hadn't seen it in a few years. It's one of my all-time favorite movies, but mm-hmm. I always forget about Kevin McCarthy in that. Like,
oh, I don't think I remembered he was in it.
Yeah, he runs up to the car early on, and it's kind of like him at the end of the original, where he's just like, right. They're coming, get out of here. And,
oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, no, so that's, I guess that kind of is a way around why I wanted to read this. I just mm-hmm. had always wanted to read it, and you had already done Dune. So I think those are the two I felt like I should have read already.
I did look on my phone. Dune was the second episode.
Okay.
Just because I wanted to start by doing the first Hugo winner. So.
Oh, that's right. So you did, what was that one?
The Demolished Man.
Oh, okay. And then are you going to even do those where they went back retroactively and like Sword in the Stone and all that? Have you done any of those yet? Like,
yeah, I've done quite a few of them actually.
Very cool.
Okay. So kind of moving into the non-spoiler discussion. This one, the premise of it, I feel like everybody already knows, but do you want to take a crack at a non-spoiler synopsis? Elevator pitch kind of thing?
it starts off kind of letting you know that there was a mission, there was a ship sent to Mars, right? Was it to colonize it?
I can't remember if it was initially to colonize, but they like sent back a message saying it's inhabited.
But they, and then they lost contact with them. And then, so I believe it's like 25 years later.
Yeah, maybe 30.
They go back and they find the one survivor is a child that was born. Right. And his name is it Valentine Smith? Is that right?
Yeah, Valentine Michael Smith.
Valentine Michael Smith. Smith. Yeah. And he was so in kind of like, which I actually found out that Heinlein's wife, this was her pitch to him to write this, was that it was going to be like the Jungle Book.
Right.
But instead of, you know, Mowgli getting, if Mowgli got raised by Martians. Right. And then they bring him back to Earth. And after, and then it kind of becomes like a, see, I don't know what is considered a spoiler here.
Right.
Yeah. Other than the very end, but basically like it turns into like there's a whole lot of controversy over like there's that like there's a possibility that like he owns Mars because which never really made sense to me. Mm-hmm. So you've got at first you've got kind of the people trying to like the government's trying to keep them hidden, and then you've got a reporter and a doctor that are together at least at the beginning of the novel, and they're trying to expose it. I mean, this is all very early on. Like, I don't think this is spoilery. And then eventually, basically, they get him out of the government, you know, mandated area. He was in a hospital or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they get him kind of like asylum, I guess, with, I can't remember his last name, but is it Jubal? Is it?
Yeah, Jubal Harshaw.
Jubal Harshaw, who is apparently like a doctor and a lawyer and a philosopher. And
right.
like a media presence. Author. Yeah. Independent author who is far and away my favorite part of this book, by the way.
Yes.
And I think maybe that's probably pretty popular. I mean, I doubt I am the only one with that opinion. Right. I love him and his like, I don't want to call them a harem because they're not, but he's got all these, a female assistants mm-hmm. that kind of run his life for him basically and make his life mm-hmm. easier. And I don't know. The dialogue of between them was just was so awesome. It was just so well written, mm-hmm. and I really enjoyed that. But then you basically follow the next however many years of Michael Smith being on Earth and just the different things he gets involved in, which include organized religion, you know, mating.
lots and lots of sex.
Lots and lots of sex. There's a lot of sex in this. It's interesting. This book was written in 1960. Is it 62, right? 61?
Written in 61.
Yeah. So, and I mean, I guess, I mean, you did have like the free swing in 60s and all that comment starting. Mm-hmm. So I guess that it does kind of make sense, but it feels very modern. It feels like it's a book that maybe some of the male female roles would be a little different, but but it does feel like it's the basic idea of it could be written today. And I don't know how much we want to get into the organized religion part before spoilers, but that felt very current. Like that predicted something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely got a strong kind of countercultural thing going.
Where
you have Jubal Harshaw, who I think, and I think many people think, is that like the author proxy, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Heinlein wants to say, hey, organized religion is all crap. Traditional marriage is all crap. So that's what that character is for.
Absolutely. He's speaking of Rick and Morty from earlier, he's like a Rick Sanchez, right? He marches to the beat of his own drummer, right? He's got the intelligence and the money and just the overall public exposure to where he feels like he's safe.
Right. Well, and he's got contacts too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, cause he ends up, I guess we'll talk about that more in spoilers, but he ends up helping out, you know, some of the characters and, things like that. He's basically who they bring him. You know, he's who they bring him to so they can, you know, get him asylum or whatever you want to call that.
Right. It's one of those books that I think is hard to talk about in complete non-spoilers.
Yes.
Well, let's move from there into kind of like overall thoughts. So like, did you like it?
Yes. Did I grok it? I grokked it. It was very grokful. I really did like it. I knew I was going to like it. I didn't know I was going to like it, but I mean, I wanted to read it. I was excited about reading it, but it was very different than what I thought. Like I felt, I don't know why. I just in my mind, I thought it was going to be more of a, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like an Alien in LA kind of type thing, you know, and it would just be him discovering things, which it is, but there's so much more to it than that. Like it's much deeper, I guess, than I thought it was going to be. And much more, like I said, it's almost Vonnegut-esque, like the way it's a little more, now it is very concrete. It's not as abstract, I guess, or as fanciful as something Vonnegut would write, but
sure.
I mean, these are real people in real situations, but it did definitely have like that kind of feel to it, or like maybe even like Douglas Adams or somebody, you know, it kind of felt more like that than what I remembered Starship Troopers and Puppet Masters being. But it was, and by the way, like I saw that there was a couple, you read like the 600 page one, right? Is that the only one that's available now?
I'm not sure. I was looking into that. Mine was like $4.99.
Oh, wow. So maybe, mine was $600, but I don't know if that was just the type or something.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading an ebook that I bought years ago.
I'm sure it was the same one, but,
well, I think the unabridged one came out in the 90s though. And the copyright on mine was from the 60s.
Oh, wow. So maybe it wasn't, I don't know. But I haven't read the other one, so I don't know whether it would be different. But But it was a pretty quick read. I mean, for me, I definitely didn't want to put it down at times, and I don't know what else to say. I really liked it. So
okay, that's good. I've pretty much liked everything that I read from Heinlein. I know there are people who have strong opinions and don't like it at all. This one is as close to a miss as I've gotten. I strongly like the first third of it, where it's like the discovery of him and trying to break him out of the hospital and then him in that kind of asylum position, right? And you're learning about his capabilities and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And he's learning more English and trying to grok things, right? Once it kind of got out of there and like he went to the carnival and stuff, I was like, well, I'm not sure.
I did not like the carnival very much. I will admit that. That was a slower
spot. I did think that was, it's kind of biting commentary against religion, right?
Yeah.
The idea that you're looking at your congregants as marks at a carnival, which I mean, as a religious person myself, I'm like, okay, that's fair.
Yeah, I gotcha. And that's also the one section of the book where there's no Jubal, right? And I feel like when he's not in it, except for maybe the first little bit where he, you know, before he's introduced, it does drag a little more. And if I'm going to talk about like a weakness in it. The characters outside of maybe Jubal and like his crew, like Jill was not a super interesting person to follow. Mm-hmm. And like I said, there would be some things I think written different now. Her character was kind of insulting in a lot of ways. I guess like you get the impression, even though they don't flat out say it, you get the impression that Mike has a hold over, like Michael Smith has a bit of a hold over people. And it's not like, not in a creepy way, but he just has like, I love that bit where one of the women is talking about kissing him.
Right.
It's one of Jubal's, assistants. I call them assistants. I don't know what else they would be called, but, I don't mean to insult anybody by saying that, but
well, that's better than harem, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Jubal wasn't sleeping with any of them.
No, he wasn't at all. I mean that was also kind of refreshing. He wasn't like James Bond or something. But she talks about kissing him. How it was amazing. Not that he was a great kisser, but because he wasn't doing anything else except kissing. Like,
right.
And it was it was pretty, it was really cool. Like the way that was written. And, I guess that was kind of the appeal that, he held over Jill, but like, she's in a relationship with, I forgot the journalist's name.
Ben.
Yeah.
Ben something.
Ben. That's right. Yeah. She's in the relationship with Helm, prior to all this happening. And that just kind of gets, swept under the rug.
Right.
I mean, he proposes to her like early on, right?
Yeah.
And
I got the impression he was doing that because he felt her pulling away.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But then so when it kind of focuses more like on Jill's part of the story, it was definitely a lot less interesting. And I mean, if we did read different versions, that was probably a good, 100 pages or so of mine. But then Jubal comes back into it.
Right.
And I agree with you. It definitely doesn't end well. I do kind of like the very end, but
I did too.
Yeah. The second half is not as interesting as the first half for sure. Mm-hmm. The buildup is a lot better than the rest. So I totally agree with that.
Yeah. I feel like the part between where Mike leaves Jubal's place and then forms the Church of All Worlds, which, this is spoilers. I mean, we're still technically non-spoilers, but whatever. That interstitial part I didn't love, but then like once Ben goes to investigate the Church of All Worlds, I really did like that because it was like an extended dialogue between Ben.
Yeah, and Ben. Jubal. That's right. I guess it was Ben before Jubal gets back into it. That's right.
So it might be best to head over to spoilers.
Okay, no,
so
that's fine.
Take the restraints off. One other thing before we get into spoilers, though, can you think of any comps for this book? You mentioned The Jungle Book, which I think is apt, and one that I had written down was actually Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, the movie, because that's kind of like a movie of The Jungle Book, but a little more serious than like the cartoon.
Yeah. I mean, there's a John Sayles movie called Brother from Another Planet, that I kept popping up in my head. Although it definitely doesn't get it. I mean, that movie does have some political commentary in it, although it's not anywhere near the same as this, but have you ever seen Being There?
No, I haven't. That's the Robin Williams one, right?
No, Peter Sellers. And like the Peter, and I wonder, I think Being There might be based on a book though. So maybe I'm completely wrong, but what that movie is about is like this, this like millionaire dies and, it was only like him and his butler, or maybe it was a woman. I can't remember, but Peter Sellers plays the butler, Chauncey. Mm. And it's just kind of follows his journey from there. And like, he knows nothing else in life.
Right.
And being a butler. So he has this very childlike, and he ends up getting involved in like all these crazy things. Like he ends up becoming like, he ends up getting to like political arenas and like women want to be with him. And he's just this really aloof individual who just wants to watch TV. You know, he doesn't have any interest in anything going on around him. Doesn't even realize he's succeeding in life. And that I thought about that constantly when I was reading this. Because the Michael Smith and the I think it's Chauncey, I think that's right. But those two characters really reminded me a lot of each other. So,
yeah, definitely aloof would be a good term.
Yeah.
The other thing I wrote down was Starman, the John Carpenter film with Jeff Bridges.
Absolutely.
Just because you're kind of seeing humanity through an alien's eyes.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I didn't even think about that. Starman is, I'm a huge John Carpenter fan, but Starman is one of those I've never really been able to latch onto for whatever reason. Yeah. And I know it's got, like, you know, hardcore fans, and I actually did pick up the, Scream Factory, I think, released a Blu-ray recently that I picked up, and, I'm going to rewatch it at some point. Maybe I'm thinking maybe my older self will enjoy it a little more than my younger self did, but yeah, no, that definitely, I can see that, like, especially like just the scene with like him healing the deer, like that felt very much in the same vein as something, you know, you know, Smith would have done. So,
yeah. Mike is also kind of like Data from the Next Generation, where he's, you know, not quite a real boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go ahead and just go get into spoilers, and that way we can talk about whatever, you know, themes or problematic stuff or whatever's in here, because there is quite a bit of that. So,
well, in this, yeah, I guess the first thing, it was funny. What was the church called again? It was the
Church of All Worlds.
Yeah, which I actually found out somebody created like a few years later. That's crazy. But I mean, then when they started getting into like, there's even a whole section where they're talking about like the way you can ascend. And I mean, it was straight up the Church of Scientology before that existed, right? Because I don't think the Church of Scientology, I mean, L. Ron Hubbard, I guess, was around.
Yeah. Yeah. He and Heinlein were friends.
Oh, that's true. So that's probably very, because I didn't read anything saying that it was relevant, but I could think of nothing else while I was reading it.
Yeah.
That was the most obvious comparison.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And even but I thought it was interesting because I don't remember the initial church he goes to, but he meets that, that reverend, which felt very much like a future like televangelist. I don't know how much of a thing that was in the 60s. Or if it was at all, but that's very much what that felt like. It just all this stuff that like I could, you know, and of course this book supposedly created the waterbed too, I read, but I just feel like Heinlein might've known stuff that, you know, we didn't know.
Yeah. The Fosterite church, right?
Yes.
Like they revere this guy who they call the Archangel Foster or something. So that's one of the weird things. I there's several little chapters that kind of step back into the eternal or something. And you find out that in fact, this Foster guy is actually like an Archangel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a little weird. But.
Yeah. That was nuts.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're also, but I guess, I don't know. I agree. That was weird. But at the same time, like, you know, we're talking, well, like, and I couldn't even figure out, cause we're talking, I mean, I guess when we're dealing with the book, we're, you know, we're dealing with like, there's Martians and, you know, Martians who like eat each other and like all this weird stuff. And, you know, I guess maybe that just seemed less weird than some other things going on. I honestly couldn't figure out how he had powers. Because he is human and it's never explained. And I guess it's something they could just teach you because, you know, but it was more than just like, I mean, he could just make people disappear and so that
discorporate people.
Yeah. That confused me. In fact, there were even times where I forgot that he was human.
Yeah.
And that might be fault of the writing actually.
The interesting thing for me about the book is that it's about this guy from Mars, and you learn little bits about what things are like on Mars, but not everything. Like, it doesn't really focus on, hey, what is the nature of the Martian aliens?
No.
You get some of it through Mike talking, but he kind of intimates that his powers are due to his mastery of the Martian language.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, it kind of reminds me of like Arrival or something like that.
Where, yeah.
Like, learning the language gives you an ability. Or even like there's some fantasy stuff like the Aragon series where like the ancient language unlocks magic.
But Arrival's a good comparison there. I had forgotten about that. It was part of it that she was able to do things because she, right? Yeah. Cause she basically,
it changed her perception, right?
Yeah. She was able to see things differently. And so, you know, maybe that's what all that was supposed to be. I don't know. I just remember that took me out sometimes because I was just trying to figure out like, this is fun, but I don't, how can he do this again? And I almost kind of wanted it to be like, I would have been actually really interested if like at the end you found out it was all kind of a sham.
Right. Yeah. There was some kind of sleight of hand.
Yeah. Like he was just this amazing, like the best magician ever.
Yeah, I don't think that theory would work, right? Because as Jubal was very interested, he's a very skeptical person, right? He didn't want Mike to be influenced by Earth religions and Earth philosophies.
And their relationship was really fascinating. And I think one thing that would change if it was written today was I think there would be a little less hesitance to turn them into I think they would have explored each other a little more maybe in a modern book because, I mean, it could be just a father-son thing, but there was definitely I felt like Jubal had never appreciated anyone more.
Right.
Because he had just never found anyone more fascinating or interesting. And Jubal could very well be like asexual. I kind of got that impression maybe he was, or he was just an older person that he had been around and, you know, that was just a part of his life that was over. Because, you know, at the end, you know, the woman, the young girl is like basically throwing herself on him, you know, and he kind of just gives in because he feels like that's easier than,
then continuing to refuse.
It's kind of, which is really weird.
It is. Yeah. Role reversal there. You'd go, nope.
Yeah. And I couldn't they never make it like, I never felt like they made it clear. Like, I don't know how old she is. And so things like that were kind of popping in my head. Like,
well, they all started looking the same and the same age. Yeah. That's as a result of the Martian rejuvenation or whatever, which that actually reminded me of, They'd Rather Be Right, which is considered the worst of the Hugo winners, but I actually kind of enjoyed it. It just has this one central idea that like once you give up all your preconceived notions and stuff, then all of a sudden like you can be young and fit and healthy.
That's interesting.
It's kind of a weird one, but there's something in that with the Martian language, right? As they start to learn this, they start to control their own bodies and, you know, like Mike is able to build himself a physique out of nothing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're correct. And us talking about this makes it even like, I'm not surprised they haven't been able to get a movie made because even though it seems like a pretty straightforward concept, there's a lot going on here that I don't know how you would get across in a film in a way that people wouldn't be like, this is dumb.
Right.
Especially as cynical as people are today.
Yeah. But there's also some reactionary stuff too, right? Mm-hmm. If you start poking pretty hard at religion, you could get some bad results from that.
Yeah. And I will say I have a very weird relationship with organized religion. I had 13 years of a Church of Christ school that I attended. And I have some, you know, differing opinions on different aspects. So whenever there is something about that, just taking a look at organized religion in an interesting way, that does fascinate me more than, you know, it always draws my attention. So that's partly why that's part of what I really liked about this book, or at least, enjoyed reading, but I don't disagree with you that I don't think it's as deep as it thinks it is.
Right.
And I think it's also, it's very cynical in a lot of ways. And I just feel like Heinlein, I don't know. I feel like Heinlein couldn't get past some of his own bullshit. And not that it's bullshit. I mean, you believe what you believe. I mean, I don't care, but like, I just don't think he could get, like, there were some things that like when it's like almost like the way the story was structured. I'm trying to think of how I'm trying to say this. He just couldn't really like get past his own issues.
Right.
To let he didn't let the story be told. It didn't feel always organic. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. I think.
I can see that.
Yeah.
You know, there's something nice to the idea that, well, how about instead of organized religion that's focused on, you know, far away things and heaven and that kind of stuff. How about something that's focused on bringing people together into a unified whole? And that's a really nice idea. And that's definitely here. Now, the fact that it means everybody sleeping with everybody else, that puts it into weird sex cult.
Muddies the waters a little bit. Yeah. No, that's a fair point because it is kind of one of those things where when you're reading about it, I mean, like I can't figure out if the book is trying to paint Mike as a villain. I mean, because he does murder people.
Right. Although he does say that you can't actually kill anyone.
That's true. That's true. And I don't even think, and he has a, yeah, but yeah, and that's kind of like, you know, he has a different perspective on everything. Right. But like, as far as the church itself, like, I don't know how much it, I mean, the sexual, I guess it just depends on how you feel about sex and, you know, with multiple partners. I don't know. But how open you are to those ideas. Because there's a lot of orgies, lot. I was not prepared for all the orgies that take place in this book. I'm surprised that's not talked about more. And maybe it is, and I just haven't heard it, you know, because I was avoiding spoilers.
Well, I mean, so we may have read different versions of the book, but there's not a lot of real explicit
depicting. You're correct. Anything. It is not explicit, but it is clearly going on.
Yes.
And it's not always orgies. There is people by themselves, but it's just, I don't know. It's just sex is definitely very openly explored in this book, but it is always from that perspective of kind of aloofness. Right. And, you know, this is just what we're doing. I remember there's that whole part where they meet, is Patty the one that's with the circus or the carnival?
Yeah, with all the tattoos.
Yeah. And they kind of bring her into their fold. And
right. Well, she tries to bring them into the Fosterite religion. Right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
But then there's like that one, like, I don't know if it's a night or if it's a few days. This part got a little, I was having a hard time really completely understanding what was going on, but it was just like, it was so matter of fact, like him and Jill and her were just like, it felt like they were just having sex for like 3 or 4 days. And
right. Yes. Extended three-way.
Yeah. And drinking a lot of water.
Where he just disappeared everybody's clothes.
Yeah. Yeah. And drinking a lot of water and, which we haven't even talked about the water thing, but,
right.
Yeah. But
yeah, I mean, that's one of those things I think makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
Where you have someplace like Mars, that's very arid, that water would be important. And so that goes into the part of the book that I really, really liked, right? Where he's in the hospital and he's like in some kind of a waterbed to protect him from the gravity.
Yeah.
And Jill really early on offers him water, total immersion in water. And so that was interesting. And that's obviously, it's one of those things where it's more important to the person receiving that than the person giving it. Jill didn't realize what she was doing. But she becomes the first water brother, right?
Yeah. And that's interesting too. I like that too. And I liked when they got to Jubal's place, he was really trying to figure out like Mike's makeup and like what everything meant. And so, because, you know, he would say things like to, you know, people that were coming in, like, if you take this water, this is what it means. And
it's serious.
Yeah. And if you do this, this is what this means, right? And he might kill you or, you know, make you disappear or whatever. I thought that part of it I found fascinating. And and I do agree with you, but then it's like, but then once they decide to leave, which I guess they kind of have to, it does, at least for a little while, it goes a little downhill. Or it's just not as interesting, I guess.
Yeah.
It's you're no longer exploring things. It just kind of turns more into like weird church sex stuff. Like
I did really enjoy going back to that. I mean, this is the part of the book that I liked. And so most of my notes are actually from that part where, Jubal was trying to figure out what happens when he sends somebody away.
Yes.
And so, you know, he's being very careful about the language that he uses. Like, I'm going to point a gun at you and I want you to make sure that you don't disappear me.
Yeah.
You know, only do this if you can grok that there's some wrongness or something. And so like he has him, he does some kind of telekinesis and then he sends something away and like they videotape it.
Yeah.
And they see it's just moving away, but they're not sure in what dimension it's moving away. I thought that was a cool science fiction thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been cool. Something cool to see visually. And then you have like the, what was the Duke? Was that the, like the, he was kind of like a caretaker, I guess, around that era. Like,
like bodyguards.
Yeah. Clean the pool.
Techo guy. And,
I thought that there was a moment with him and Jubal where he is saying he doesn't know if he really buys into all this. And then Jubal's like, you know, like is basically going to fire him because he's like, like, if you're going to be like, if I don't get you out of here, like you might get, you know, he might make you disappear or he's going
to,
you know, and it was just, I don't know. It was just really interesting. Like I don't know what that is, but I've never seen a book explore like an alien's powers in that way. It was more than just, you know, they can vomit on you and, you know, or they can point their finger at you and shoot something. And, you know, it was, there was a lot more to it. And there was a lot more in a lot of ways, it felt more dangerous, because, and which was an interesting tonal shift in the book, because you had the kind of this lightheartedness, this aloofness I keep saying, but then you also had this more serious aspect where, you know, if, you know, even though he seems like a puppy, you know, he can still bite you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. More like a cat, right?
Yeah.
Where you're not exactly sure what's going on in there.
Yeah. And I think that was also my favorite aspect, you know, to the best writing and stuff there, I thought was very sharp. And then at the end as well, but where everything kind of comes back together, and then you really, but I will say with the end, even though I did kind of like it, I did, after I started thinking about it, it was, and maybe this wasn't as common then, but I feel like that Christ figure has become kind of a cliche.
Yeah.
And it felt a little heavy-handed, but I feel bad saying that, because it's very possible that everything I've seen has just been copying Stranger in Strangeland, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's a problem. That's the thing you have to deal with when you read, you know, when you read older stuff and you've seen everything that's come after it, I guess. So.
Yeah, that's always the thing. You know, the something that everything else derives from feels derivative of everything else.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for sure.
That, you know, very much the Christ kind of idea at the end when he goes out, you know, because he says he groks, you know, it's the waiting has, I can't remember what the term was, right? Waiting had come or something
like that. Yeah.
And that reminds me very much of, in the Bible, in the fullness of time, God sent his son, you know, that's the kind of similar language to what he was going.
I feel like having knowledge of the Bible, by the way, makes this book make a little more sense. I don't know that I've felt that before reading fiction, but.
So a couple things that I thought were fun, were the whole concept of the fair witness.
Yes.
Where like you have these people that that have some kind of perfect recall and they can't lie about what they've witnessed.
Yeah.
And I thought it was cool that it mentioned that there's complications to it, where if they're going to tell the absolute truth of what they saw, they, as part of that, they have to say, but I may not have seen everything, right?
Yeah.
This is what I saw, but that doesn't mean necessarily what you think it means.
Absolutely.
But on the other hand, it'd be nice if we had some fair witnesses now, you know, so they could go, nope, none of that stuff happened.
But that is interesting, right? Because like you said, it's what they saw, but at the same time, you know, I can't say I saw everything. I can only tell you. So it's like you still only get part of the story.
Yeah, they can't necessarily draw inferences from what they saw.
But you feel like, Twitter would be a very different thing, and you know, in this universe or this, because I can't remember, when is this set? It's like,
I thought it was like 2050.
Maybe it was like 2050. I can't remember. I feel like there was a five in there, but I know it was in the future, obviously from 1961. And I thought it was past us currently. Although that's my favorite, by the way, whenever you go back and watch something and it's like, you know, like we just had Blade Runner Day, I think, what, a couple years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're right. That would be great to have today.
Real handy.
I can't even, but then who would believe them?
Right. That's the thing, right? You fact checking is fake news. So. Okay.
It's crazy.
nobody gets facts. So,
It's just, I could spend hours. Sorry. I could just thinking about like social media interactions.
Yeah. Me too. We don't need a tangent on that.
Well, it's like now you can't even like, I literally have gotten to where I get sucked into some things sometimes, but I'm pretty much like, I'm just going to say that this was cool. Or share this fun tweet. Like I'm not getting into any discussions. I've muted like 99% of sports Twitter that I followed because because it was too much, you know. It was God, people are so mean. I'm sorry. That's a whole other thing. Yeah.
I did think it's almost relevant to today, right? The idea of they're hiding the man from Mars, but they want to still have like sound bites from him. And so they create this other man from Mars, who's an actor, which I thought was really a cool idea. And then at some point you have to go with the lie far enough to say, no, that other guy who's popping up, he's an imposter. So.
Yeah, that was early on too. That was another interesting thing that happened because, Ben figures that out pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. That whole thing. And did we really ever find out what happened to Ben? Did they just kind of sequester him, I guess?
Yeah, I think so.
That felt very relevant. Like that felt like if we ever made contact with somebody like that, I feel like something along those lines would probably happen, but maybe I've watched too many movies and I'm just,
yeah.
I don't know, because I'm also after this past couple of years, I don't know that our government is smart enough to, or can come together in a way to where something like that could be done.
True. Yeah, that's the thing, right? The people who are all like, you know, anybody who believes these conspiracy theories has never been like a project manager.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how could you possibly, like, you could not contain a UFO for 70 years or whatever it's been at this point, yeah. You know?
Well, that's like, I mean, there's people who believe that we didn't go to the moon, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, we were in the Cold War, right? If we didn't go to the moon, the Russians absolutely would have called us out on it. So
yeah, absolutely. And well, I mean, there's people that don't believe there's a Holocaust, and you know,
right.
There's people that believe the world is flat. So I mean, it's,
oh man,
it's too much.
Yeah. Yeah. I did think, there was a statement in there at some point when they were talking about the imposter guy, and Ben's like, oh, you know, the scientists will prove that he's not who he says he mm-hmm. is. And the like astrologer lady says something, or maybe it was Jubal who said like, oh, that's all half guesswork and half superstition. The only true science is astrology.
That actually might have been Jubal, but there was that. Yeah, there was that person. But yeah, no, you're right. That was very funny.
Yeah. We should talk about some of the problematic stuff here, because
sure.
Reading it as a couple straight white guys, there's stuff that, you know, might fly by us that could stick out to other people. Because like you said, right, the way Jubal thinks about the women who are around him, mm-hmm. who are his assistants, he kind of treats them all equally, right? And,
yes.
And they take turns being like, what do you call it, front?
Yes.
Who's the person who has to come running and take dictation from him at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
Which those were kind of fun every time he'd come up with a little prompt, a little writing
yeah.
prompt. But, you know, it talks about, it's very kind of male gaze, the way he describes all the women.
Yes.
You know, that some of them are curvier and thinner and taller and that kind of stuff.
Well, and then all of them, the way Heinlein writes them, like they don't care. Like they're just like, oh, that's so funny. And, you know, they just,
right.
or, and I mean, I guess you could read that as they're strong, but I just,
right.
I feel like that's, I don't know. That feels like you said, it feels very male gazey. Like this is how Heinlein yeah. would like his, you know, women around him to be. Like, I don't know if that's what he meant, yeah. but that's kind of how it felt.
Maybe so. I mean, because the book does kind of go out of its way to show that Jill and Anne and Dorcas and Miriam, mm-hmm. you know, they're all super competent.
Yes, they are. Absolutely.
But then, like, it also deliberately points out how different they are from most women.
Yes, so. Absolutely. Well, and Anne and Dorcas and Miriam, you know, because Jill comes on when she brings Mike. So
right.
the other three, like, I thought it was interesting how much more, like, I thought they were better written characters than mm-hmm. than Jill. Like I felt like they actually had more personality and just more, I don't know, pizzazz or whatever, but which was kind of weird because Jill was the one that, like I said, we end up having to kind of focus on for a while, and
yeah,
I felt like we knew nothing about her. But like if it had been like one of the other three, because like I said, that one interaction where I think it's Anne maybe that, or maybe it's Dorcas, but whoever's talking about him kissing, it's not Jill. It's one of them.
Oh yeah. That was Dorcas.
Dorcas. Okay. And, you know, like I said, that gave more character depth than I feel like we ever got with Jill.
Right. I mean, in fairness, we didn't get a bunch of character depth from Duke either. So
no, that's true. That's true. Oh, well, and honestly, Mike, I mean, that's another
yeah.
weird thing about this book. And I think it's purposeful, but like, you know, his character is just like the whole time he's so, I mean, he's, I'm trying to think of what I'm trying to say. He's so, I mean, I've already said aloof a bunch of times, but that's not what I'm even right. thinking.
Smug
and just doesn't even really know like exactly what he's doing. And I mean, that's just kind of in it. So it's like every few pages, like he'll do something else, you know, and it just kind of yeah. felt like that thing. Whereas, you know, yeah. you have Jubal's like this, you know, very strong, independent, well thought out, you know,
yeah.
individual.
I pictured him like a Sorkin character.
Yeah.
And like I could see if Sorkin wrote the dialogue there, it would totally fit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think you could, yeah, Sorkin would be great. Like if you could, like, I don't know. I kept thinking too, like if they made this today, like maybe Charlie Kaufman would be a really interesting, but I don't know, but I feel like Kaufman's kind of on his own planet right now. I don't know if you've read about Antkind, which was this novel he wrote. Highly recommend it, but it's, it's very different. And then there's like, you know, Sendecky, New York and all that stuff. So, but I, that's right. For some reason, this felt very Kaufman-esque, you know, at times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Sorkin would write. Yeah. Jubal did feel very West Wing. Like,
yeah,
like he would be telling Martin Sheen what to do. And
yeah. So the other part is they talk about, right, becoming Water Brothers and the type of people that they'll bring into that.
Yes.
And there is a mention at some point that it's like super girly women and super masculine men and nothing in between. And I feel like that's one of those things that if it was turned into a movie now, you'd need to smooth over a lot of that.
Yeah. Well, like, and you were saying, which I guess, I mean, I guess I did pick up on that, but like you said, like they all saw each other, right, as different mm-hmm. and young and hot
yeah.
and, you know, doable or whatever. I don't know. That seemed to be all they were doing. I couldn't even figure out like what else they were doing other than having sex, but,
yeah, sharing water, I guess.
Sharing water. Yeah. Which you, if you had that much sex, you would need water. So
you do have to hydrate.
That is fair. But, and I even read like some, like, did you read any reviews that were at the time?
No, I try not to do that just because I don't want it to color the discussion.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's good. Well, I haven't said anything I've read in that, but I read like, I think I was just reading some information on it. I just saw snippets, but a lot of reviewers at the time, not surprisingly, were kind of judging it based on the sexual aspects and that, like,
right.
like that's all the book was going for. But like you said, it's not that explicit, but maybe in 1962, you know. I don't know though. D.H. Lawrence was around. So
you're right. Yeah.
I mean, this seems pretty tame, but I guess mm-hmm. at the time for a mainstream book, it was, you know, a little yeah. more than most people. Plus it was also, I mean, getting into religion and stuff that probably didn't help.
Right. I'm wondering about this book. There's, you know, some kind of 60s casual attitudes about many things, including the gender issues and that kind of stuff that where we've moved away, or, you know, progressed a little bit. But there's also some kind of casual racism there. And I'm not yeah. sure what to make of the fact that Dr. Mahmood is named Stinky. And I'm like,
yes,
is that, I have no idea.
I don't either. And I don't feel like there was ever anything in there that explained it. They just kind of called him yeah. that. And yeah, I don't think it was anything good. So I just,
no, I don't think it was. And nobody ever said like, oh, that Stinky Arab or whatever.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all.
But the fact that it wasn't explained made me think, oh, it's just super casual. And
I will say, like, based on other books I've read from around this time period, I found this, at least in that area, I found this a little less problematic, but there's definitely some stuff just thrown around that you just, you know, reading yeah. in 2020, you're just kind of like, whoa.
Yeah. There's like a journalist named Kung.
Yeah.
And Jubal describes him as a bland Buddha.
Like, really? Yeah. Yeah. Oh. And just in the names outside of Jubal, which is a really cool name, like all the names are just very like simplistic or very on the nose. Right.
I actually kind of,
and maybe that's purposeful.
I think I did read someplace that Heinlein didn't have a lot of patience for complicated alien names and that kind mm-hmm. of stuff, which is why his alien's name is Smith.
I think that actually does work. I think his name. Well, and he's not an alien. Well, he is an alien, but he's right. not. He's a human alien, I guess. Yeah. And I kind of wish the book had also. I mean, I know you're not supposed to talk about what isn't there, but like you mentioned early on that they don't really get a whole lot into like. Like they talk about the Martian culture, but they don't really
right.
get into like the day to day, like what went on. And mm-hmm. I would like to know more about, you know, and I mean, I would have much rather had like some flashbacks to mm-hmm. what was going on with him there than some of that, like, you know, carnival and meeting Patty and, yeah. you know, you could have trimmed some of that and, I don't know, but
yeah.
but maybe that wouldn't have added anything. But I do know that it left me wanting to know more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he talks about like the Martian elders or old
yeah.
ones, I think.
Yeah.
Where toward the end, I just kind of assumed those are like the people who are on the astral plane.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're like ghosts, right? Or souls
yeah.
or, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That was fascinating.
Yeah.
Because that was very different and mm-hmm. Not something... I mean, you know, I'm not talking like John Carpenter's Ghost of Mars, but a more interesting aspect idea like that.
Yeah. We haven't talked about either the eventually Mike comes to Jubal when Jubal mm-hmm. finally comes to the compound or whatever you want to call it in Waco, I guess.
Yeah.
And confesses to him and says, I think I was sent here as like a scout, you know?
Yeah.
And the Martians are going to decide if they want to destroy our planet like they did the fifth planet, which I thought was a kind of a cool bit of science fiction.
Yeah. That was cool, but then it just kind of ends there, right? Because
right.
then we have to get into the whole, like, he's got to get stoned and
right.
all that fun stuff. So if you mm-hmm. can call a stoning yeah, like
the
fun.
The martyring of Stephen in the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wrote down, how are all psychics not out of business in 2020? Not sure where that came from. I think at some point, like Jubal got the astrologer lady to give a reading to the secretary general's wife in order to somehow arrange mm-hmm. the asylum. But yeah, in 2020, like how any psychic that didn't predict all of 2020 should be, you know, not working anymore.
Yeah. There was an old, I don't remember who the stand-up comic was, but I remember that, and this was like probably in the '90s or something. I saw somebody talking about like, whenever they pass a closed down psychic shop, they're always yeah. like, how did they not know? Like, you know, like how did they not know they were going out of business? Like,
right.
But I gotta be honest, I think in 2020, and especially with everything that's been going on, I think that profession might be actually gaining a little bit just because like, yeah. I feel like there are a lot of people out there that would believe something like that before, like you were talking about would, you know, take mm-hmm. facts seriously. So,
right. One of the podcasts I like to listen to is called The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Even though I'm a Christian, I like listening to atheists for some reason. They always at the, I think it's at the end of the year, they do like, you know, the biggest psychic wish,
yeah.
the things that no psychic predicted. And there's going to be a lot of them this year.
No, I think you and Dicer would have some really fascinating conversations. Jeremy too.
I think so.
Yeah. Couple of preacher sons. Mm-hmm. No, but I think that's interesting though. I might have to check that out. That sounds fascinating. I think that's cool that you, not necessarily that you're like, not necessarily cool that they're atheists, but I just think it's cool that you like, you know, you take everybody's perspective.
Right. Yeah. I do try to step outside the bubble.
So. Yeah. Well, thankfully I had a mom that was very much preached that you need to experience everything. Like I'm not going to close mm-hmm. you in.
Right.
So I made it out. Some people don't, you know, so, but anyways, that's a whole other conversation. Sorry. I feel like I've just mm-hmm. got us off on tangents. I apologize.
I don't, it doesn't bother me. I feel like the book is a little tangential in places.
It is. So. And I think but the more I talk about it, I think that's what I like about it. I mean, I like just a straightforward science fiction adventure, but I think because I was expecting that to be this and then it was something so much different than that, it kind of blew me away at times. But I also do yeah. definitely agree with you that there are parts of it I feel like when he, because I know he fought for it to be, I guess, whatever the version is that exists now at the time, right. but I get a feeling that it was probably wise to cut whatever they cut.
Right. But at least the Heinlein cut.
Yeah, exactly.
One of my favorite little asides things was, it reminded me of Data a little bit, mm-hmm. was when he referred to the TV or the stereo vision receiver as the goddamn noisy box.
Yes. Yeah, that was very good. Who said that though? Was it Jubal or was it Smith?
Oh, Smith said it, but I think he heard it from Jubal.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Yeah. I do remember that term being thrown out there. That was very funny. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that they called it stereo vision, which sounds so archaic.
Yeah.
But in 1962, that was like a futuristic concept.
Right.
But like I said, we've talked about how like the way this book deals with religion and like almost foreseeing like what was to come yeah. with some of these like more cultish. And I even read something where this book was banned in some areas mm-hmm. because they actually thought it was related to Charles Manson in a way. Like they, they thought there was a connection to Charles Manson with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it got banned in some areas, and maybe that had to do with the sexual aspects and stuff too, more the hippie culture or whatever. But and then like you just said Waco, and like I didn't even think about that, you know. But you, definitely that felt like a compound, and mm-hmm. You know, or Jim Jones or something. And
right,
I mean, no one drinks Kool-Aid, but you know, there's definitely some stuff going on there that you could see could easily turn into something like that.
Yeah.
And all that feels like, And maybe that is closer to when all that stuff was starting to go on. But I just, it feels to me like it was it kind of predicted all that stuff in an interesting way. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that I found interesting about the religious aspect of it is that you might expect it to be like a doomsday cult or something, mm-hmm. but like there didn't seem to be much actual preaching.
No.
You know, or repenting, or it was all kind of like everybody coming together and moving towards something together.
You know, Dicer, actually, Aaron Dicer is somebody who's kind of given me this perspective where, like, you know, you never know what's going on in those things in any situation. Like, you know, you're looking at it from an outsider's perspective. You're seeing the aftermath. And right. I have a feeling if this actually existed and we're on the outside of this, you know, we would be there. Would the historical documents would be all about the weird sex acts and, you know, people were being forced on each other. And, you know, Smith was just basically like a pimp or, you know, I don't know, like a religious pimp or something. It's what they would call it.
I mean, that's who's telling the story of it, right? You kind of do wonder at the end of the book when they all kind of, they consume a little bit of micrite and then they go off to form the satellite campuses of the Church of All Worlds or whatever. And you do wonder at what point does somebody start denying that Mike ever existed?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he would become like a Christ, right? I mean, that is exactly what he would become. That's interesting because you do wonder, like, you know, if this book was written from, like, say, Duke's perspective or, you know, or Foster's perspective or, you know, like what, you know, how, or somebody in the government, like, how would that be different? You know, we see it from the anti-government perspective. Mm-hmm. So obviously him being there is he's being tortured or even if he's not being tortured, he's being held against his will. And
right.
But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the day the earth stood still in a lot of ways, right? Where the government really wanted to deal with him, especially in the remake, which I feel like is a little underrated. It's not good, but it's not as bad as people think.
Yeah.
Like in that movie, especially in the remake and in the old one, right? Klaatu didn't have any interest in talking to government leaders, right? He wanted to talk to scientists and philosophers and wanted to do good things.
And that makes so much sense now, right?
Yeah, it sure does.
And I don't, because anybody listening to this, I don't want anybody to think I'm like anti-government. I'm not. Right. I think it has more to do with not the intelligence. It has to do with just the fact that getting that many people to agree on something, especially these days, is just, it's impossible. I mean, you can't even get like, I don't know, that's a whole other thing. But yeah, but it's just, it's impossible. It's just, I mean, just... seeing the things that people will attack you for, like on Twitter and stuff, it's, you know, you're just like, there's just, we're screwed. There's no way.
Yep. All right. Well, we've been rambling a little bit. Yeah. I'll probably edit some of that out, but final thoughts on the book.
I think I gotta be honest, man. It's one of those things. I think overall, I enjoyed the experience. I don't know that I'd give it like it's like an A or anything, but like, I just, I don't know. I really got a kick out of it. I think especially if you're like a Douglas Adams, Kurt Vonnegut kind of person, I think you'll find a lot of stuff in here that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. At least based on the couple of Heinlein books I had read before this, I felt this was different for him, but you've read a lot more Heinlein. Mm-hmm. So maybe you're like, no, this is the same.
I don't know.
It felt different than Starship Troopers and Puppet Masters. That's all I know. But I liked it overall. I did. I enjoyed reading it. I'm glad I can, you know, check it off the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. And that's kind of where I'm at, right? This is my last of, or the last of the ones that I've read, that I'll have to read for his actual Hugo winners. There's one more retro Hugo that, Farmer in the Sky, which is like a juvenile or something. But yeah, so at some point I think I'm going to have to get like a panel discussion together with people who have read all of the Heinlein winners and kind of compare them and that kind of stuff and see what people think. And I'm sure, you know, like everybody's list is going to be different. So before we sign off, I guess I will say, I think I liked the book. I didn't love it. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those kind of classics that is always, it always makes lists of have you read these science fiction books? And so I'm grateful that you picked it so we could discuss it. And it's always really cool to have the discussion, right? Because especially if it's somebody who likes something better than you do, that it always kind of makes me go, you know, that book was pretty interesting and this discussion is good. So I want to thank you for doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, so before we sign off, how can people find you?
I am on Twitter. I'm fairly active on there, I guess. I'll definitely answer your, like, you know, stuff if you holler at me, but I'm at Sam Loomis 13. I also run the TV Sins Twitter, which I want to say it's like at TV. I don't know. If you look up TV Sins on Twitter, you'll find it. It's like TV Sins 1. I don't have it off the top of my head.
I'll get all the links and put them in the show notes.
So. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm bad about that. But if you want to reach out to me on that one, I'll definitely answer you. I typically just tweet out links to the videos and stuff, but I do that. And then I do the podcast every week, Behind the Sins, with Danae Hughes and Aaron Dicer. That usually drops on Thursday, I think. And, every week we have something, even if it's just Danae singing a song about chips, we have something.
These chips are good.
Oh my God. But, and I don't really do anything else social media wise. I might have an Instagram account. I don't even remember now.
I have one for the podcast and I'm like a month behind on posting stuff. I always forget.
Definitely Twitter is the easiest place to reach me. I will say CinemaSins, we do have a Discord channel. We do have a Discord and,
mm-hmm. And subreddit too, right?
And subreddit. Yeah. That's mostly Jeremy, but, he shows us stuff whenever, you know, something comes to us. So yeah, we've got subreddit, Discord. There's CinemaSins Facebook. So CinemaSins you can find everywhere. I'm around.
Cool. Well, Jonathan, it was a ton of fun talking to you. I really appreciate it.
Cool.
All right. I'll talk to you later. I'm sure I'll say hi to you on Twitter. All right. Okay. Bye. Alrighty, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Jonathan. I really enjoyed it. It was really fun talking to him. And I absolutely encourage you, if you've not checked out CinemaSins, I know they're popular and a lot of people know about them. But if you know more about the people behind it, you kind of understand where their comedy comes from. And it's from a place of love and I don't think that's well understood enough. But if you listen to something like Behind the Sins, you'll really get a sense of that. And the Sincast as well. So I'll put all those links in the show notes. I hope you'll check them out. This episode will be going up 1st of January, 2021. 2020 has been quite a year, and I hope that next year is better. But one really great thing this year was continuing to do this podcast and engaging with my listeners and with my patrons. And I really look forward to doing that in 2021 as well. So if you'd like to get a hold of me, you can do that feedback@hugospodcast.com, or you can go up to the website and fill out the contact form there. You can tweet at me @HugosPodcast, and I'm pretty responsive there as well. I actually got myself a Worldcon membership, so I'm actually going to be nominating and voting in the Hugo Awards for 2021. If you would like to support this podcast financially and my other podcasting that I do on Take Me to Your Reader and Brief and Not So Brief, you can go up to patreon.com/HugosPodcast and sign up to support, and I'd really appreciate it. But if you want to support this podcast and my other podcasts in a non-monetary fashion, if you would retweet the episode, share them with your friends, leave a review wherever you listen to the podcast. I actually got a review recently that said he wished the episodes were longer, which, you know, it's always good to hear that you're leaving people wanting more. I don't seek to be comprehensive in these episodes. This is a discussion of a book, not the discussion of a book. So I always love to continue the conversation on Twitter or over email. Okay, I think that's going to do it for this time. So happy 2021. May it be a better year than 2020. I am going to continue doing Comfort Reads episodes just because I have a lot of people still signed up for those. So I'm going to continue doing that into 2021 because I can't imagine things are just going to get immediately better in 2021. But we can hope. All right. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next time. Bye. The theme music for the Hugo's There podcast was composed and performed by Tim Kusky.